Shalom, welcome to Ask JTF, the program in which we attempt to answer questions from our great JTFers. I'm Chaim Ben Pesach from the Jewish Task Force.
And I'm Ron Golan.
Ron Golan is our representative in Israel, and we're going to be speaking to him about the situation in Israel, including some shocking events that occurred in the past few days. You should be shocked by them. But before we get to that, this program is dedicated to a refuah shlema, complete recovery, for Sharon Mitman, Elsie Friedland, Shlomo ben Sara and Dorit bat Sara, and to Ilui Neshamot, elevating of the souls for Malka bat Meir, Allegra bat Shlomo, Elizabeth Friedland, Erwin Friedland, Myron Friedland, Daniel Nankin, Victor Chazdai, Pesach Zev ben Dov, Lunita Adler, Shifra Hoffman, Reuven Hoffman, Barry Hoffman, Aramir Kahana, Harab Benjamin Kahana, Tzipora Fegi bat Liba, Yosef ben Meir, Robert Mitman, Dennis Shore, Helen Friedman, and Charles Zolat. Okay, welcome to the program, Ron.
Thank you, Chaim.
Ron, we had an incident recently where, this past few days, where an Arab terrorist attacked one of the hilltops. The hilltop, of course, the hilltop youth have established communities on dozens of strategic hilltops to control the high ground of Judea and Samaria to prevent a Palestinian state, and their presence there is essential to preventing a Palestinian state. And one of these hilltops is called Ramat Migron. And an Arab terrorist attacked in Ramat Migron in the past few days, several days ago. And his objective, of course, was to murder the Jewish women and children there. And something happened there. There was an incident there that ended up with pretty shocking results. You want to tell us about it, Ron?
This cowardly Arab terrorist infiltrated the Jewish community. He tried to break into one of the family's homes where one of the women and one of the children were staying at. And a great tragedy was prevented when the hilltop youth caught him red-handed and gave him a proper beating. They called the police, who arrested him and released him almost immediately. And now this terrorist is roaming freely. The village where the terrorists came from, the village is called Mukhmus, which is one of the three Arab villages that surround this community. Mukhmus is one village, and the other two villages are Diyud Dibuan and Bulka. And these three villages have been posting videos online where they show footages of the community, of the houses, and of the people, and where they proclaim that they will kill all the Jews. They have posted songs where they sing that they will burn Tel Aviv. This is a few days after the murderous attack in Tel Aviv when they murdered the free Jews, and the Jews there feel that the next Arab attack is imminent. They feel in grave danger.
I just want to mention a couple of things, highlight a couple of things you mentioned because they're pretty shocking. First of all, you said that the Arab terrorist who entered this community to murder Jewish women and children, Arab terrorist entering the community to murder Jewish women and children, and he was released. He was released the same day, I believe. Is that correct?
Indeed. He was released almost immediately after.
The police arrest him and then release almost immediately someone who entered, an Arab terrorist, an Islamic terrorist, who entered with the intention of murdering women and children, and he's released? This is unbelievable. I mean, this just shows that the heroic hilltop youth cannot count on the Israeli police or the Israeli army or the Israeli authorities for any protection or any minimal behavior that any civilized country would grant to its citizens in order to protect its citizens from terrorist mass murder. It's just unbelievable.
Also, a rabid animal that was trying to murder Jewish women and children is roaming Israel freely.
And you also mentioned that they've posted films, that they post videos of, and I've seen the video, at least one of them. They post videos and they're posting them on Facebook and TikTok, if I'm not mistaken. They're posting videos. Yeah, they're posting videos where they promise to murder all of the people and they're showing footage of the hilltop community and of their homes and saying, "We're going to murder you. Your day is coming. We're going to murder you." And then
showing the faces of the Jews they want to murder.
And Facebook and TikTok allow them to continue to post the videos. By the way, this is not that Facebook and TikTok don't censor. That they don't censor.
That's free speech.
Yeah, that they're allowed to do, post videos and post pictures of people and say, we're going to murder you and your women and children. That's allowed. And of course, if a Jew wanted to post videos to defend themselves, that would be censored immediately. And they're posting this and then saying that they're going to burn Tel Aviv. This is just, it's incredible. And it's also incredible, I just want to mention, Ron, that it's also incredible that the Israeli police and the Israeli, the border guard, the police, the army, don't go in and arrest these people who are posting these videos.
And you know, Chaim, we mentioned the murderous attack in Tel Aviv, in which three young Jews were murdered. And on the same day that this terrorist attack happened, and while the terrorist was still on the run and the police had no clue as to where the hell he was, the police raided Itzar, which is a community in Samaria, and arrested three Jews who were going out to protest this Arab terrorism. And so instead of doing their job and going after the terrorists, they were busy persecuting Jews.
In other words, they murdered three innocent Jews. Three young Jews were murdered this past week in Tel Aviv. And while the blood of the three young Jews is still on the ground in Tel Aviv, the police are reacting by arresting Jews who just wanted to protest the fact that these terrorist attacks are taking place. They just wanted to peacefully protest, and they arrested these three Jews. It's just absolutely incredible. And Ron, I believe you knew one of the young Jews that was murdered this week in Tel Aviv.
Yes, he went to school with me. He went to school with me, Toma Muad. May Hashem avenge his blood.
Absolutely. Hashem Yikom Damo. Absolutely. Ron, I also want to ask you about the fact that these three Jews that were arrested, what were they charged with? What was the proof against them?
They had absolutely no proof. They had absolutely no evidence. And because they couldn't prove any case against them, they put them under administrative detention.
And you know, I think some of our people who watch these shows on a regular basis know that Israel has something called the administrative detention law, which is a carryover from the British mandatory period. It's completely anti-democratic. You don't have this in any democratic country. By the way, the British use this law against their colonists to suppress their colonists. But in England itself, in Great Britain itself, they would never do this to British citizens. Under administrative detention, the government can come in and arrest somebody without any charges, without any proof or evidence, without any trial, without the right to see the evidence. And in some cases, they've even denied people the right to a lawyer. In the past, there were cases where they even denied them the right to a lawyer. And denied them the right, in some cases in the past, they even denied them the right to see a judge. Unbelievable. In other words, you have no charges. They just arrest you because they feel like it. And there are no charges, no evidence, nothing. They could just come and arrest you. And this is what they did to these three young Jews.
And that's not even the end of it.
Yeah, and that's just one part of it, that they arrested these three Jews. I believe that they did something else. Am I correct that they did something else?
Yes, they gave them they gave an order, which is called administrative.
Restraining order.
Yes, an administrative restraining order. We actually had to translate this term. Into English because this Bolshevik concept simply doesn't exist in the English-speaking world, in the democratic liberal world. So we really had to try to translate it properly.
Yeah, absolutely. And by the way, with the order, these orders, now this is different. The administrative detention order, they actually put, there's actually a Jew in jail now under administrative detention for no reason. He didn't do anything wrong. He just protests against government policies, which is supposed to have a right to do in a democratic country. And for that, he's administrative detention. He's put in jail with no charges, with no evidence, with no right to see any evidence. That's in prison. But now they have another thing that they're doing, where they're going up to Jews and they're telling them, you are no longer allowed to go to Judea and Samaria. These are Jews who live in Judea and Samaria, or who study in Judea and Samaria, whose families are in Judea and Samaria. They're not allowed to go to their homes. They've been banned from their homes and told, you can't go anywhere near your home. You are now banned and expelled from your home and not allowed to go anywhere near your home. There's a restraining order against you going near your home or going anywhere.
And if you go near your home, you will be arrested.
Right. And something, by the way, which they're not doing to the Arabs. The Arabs who want to destroy Israel and who hate the Jews and want to do and again are posting videos promising to exterminate the whole Jewish people and burn Tel Aviv. The Arabs who are doing this, there's no order barring them from Judea and Samaria. There's no administrative detention order against them. They're not being touched. In fact, when they carry out terrorist attacks against Jews, they're released the same day. This is justice. What type of justice is this? What type of country is this? This is a Jewish homeland? This is a country that acts against its own people.
And again, Chaim, that's not all of it, because the Jews who are under this restraining order are also not allowed to contact many of their friends or their families, and if they do it, they will get arrested.
So can you imagine being in a situation, I just want people who are viewers to understand this, imagine a situation where suddenly the government gives you an order and says, you can't contact your family, you can't contact your friends, your relatives, anybody that you know, you can't contact anybody. You're just stuck now outside of Judea and Samaria, and you're not allowed to contact, we've given you a long list of people, and you're not allowed to contact any of these people. Can you imagine?
You are a refugee in your own country.
It's absolutely unbelievable. It's absolutely unbelievable. Arab terrorists and illegal aliens and enemies of the Jewish people have more rights in Israel than patriotic, God-fearing Jews. That's what we've come to. And this is why we have to support the Hilltop Youth. Because the Hilltop Youth are the answer to this injustice. They're the answer to this type of injustice.
They are the worst nightmare of the self-hating Jews who are in power in Israel.
Absolutely. And that's why the self-hating Jews are so much against them.
They're so much determined to crush them.
Right. Absolutely. Now, Ron, obviously there's a very serious security problem that the Hilltop Youth face, because as you mentioned, in Ramat Migron, for example, there are only two families living there, and then they have some single teenagers and maybe some in their early 20s who are studying Torah there and volunteering there. So it's just really a handful of people on that particular hilltop, which is a strategic, vitally strategic hilltop. We must keep control of that, or we're going to be in a lot of trouble if the Arabs take control of that hilltop. And they're surrounded by three Arab villages. I think you told me before that there are 10,000 Arabs living in these three villages that surround.
In total, yes. In total, yes. So it's really about 10,000 Arabs against a handful of Jews. It's really a microcosmos of the entire Jewish Arab conflict. You know, of Israel versus the entire Arab world.
It's just incredible. So they obviously face very serious security issues, and JTF has helped with these security issues. I want our people to know that this is a matter of life and death, both for the Jews on the hilltops who are brave, brave, heroic, noble Jews who are defending all of the Jewish people and on the front line defending the whole Jewish people. For them, it's a matter of life and death, for them and their children and their families. God forbid that anything bad should happen to them. And one of them in Chomish, by the way, was murdered.
In December.
I mean,
His name was Yehuda Dimentman. He was a very, very precious Jew, very holy Jew.
Yes.
And his blood is on the hands of the Israeli government who persecuted and abandoned him and his community.
By the way, after his murder, how did the Israeli government react? By destroying the hilltop there several times again, and blocking it and destroying it and preventing people from going there. It's just unbelievable. But Ron, I want to ask you, they have very serious security needs, and we have tried to protect them. And JTF, I think, has been responsible for saving their lives in the past with the things that we've contributed, that we've helped them with.
For example, they use pickup trucks, which were critical when the Arabs attack. These pickup trucks are critical for bringing reinforcements, and we also provided them with drones. These drones help them gather intelligence on the surrounding Arab villages, so they would able to know when Arabs are going to attack. For example, if an Arab managed to flee, they would be able to find him.
And and obviously, you know, with drones, you can possibly see Arabs on their way to commit terrorist attacks. Also, if you're watching, you can see them, you know, because the drones that we got them have been very, very good. They're very good drones. They're very effective. They give them huge. I mean, they could see a huge swath of land, of territory, with these drones that we bought them. And as you said, the pickup trucks to bring in reinforcements, it's essential. It's essential for to save their lives if God forbid there's an emergency situation there. And also, Ron, we've paved roads for them. They had rocky roads and things where they couldn't.
They live on a mountainous terrain, which is very difficult to drive on for regular cars. But these roads are essential for not just for bringing reinforcements, but for everything, you know, for everyday driving there. So without these roads, life there would have been much more difficult than it already is.
Ron, you are someone who was born in Israel, Baruch Hashem, and you're a brilliant person. You speak Hebrew, of course, as your native language, and you speak English and Russian and Arabic. So I don't know how many people out there that are watching this video speak four different languages, and four different languages are completely different one from the other. I mean, you're a very talented, brilliant person. You don't even have to comment on that. I'm saying that. I know you, and I know you are. So you don't even have to comment on that. But Ron, I want to ask you a question. Is it important for Israel and the Jewish people that the Hilltop Youth win this struggle?
The Hilltop Youth must win, because if they don't win, if they lose, all of us will lose. If they lose, there would be a so-called Palestinian state, and Israel would be in grave danger. Israel will be in existential danger, in danger of a second Holocaust. The Arabs and the self-hating Jews must not win. The good Jews, the brave Jews, the idealistic Jews, they must win. We mustn't stand idly by brothers' blood. We must help them. As they, in the same way they're fighting for us, we must fight for them and help them as much as we can.
And Ron, you know, the Hilltop Youth, I think that they are already serving as an inspiration to all Jewish youth in Israel. I think that they're Jewish youth who look at them and see them and they have an example of their bravery and their idealism. Do you think the Hilltop Youth can serve as an inspiration and an example for Jewish youth in general?
Absolutely. I think the Hilltop Youth really set an example for all Jewish youth. When Jewish youth see how noble and how selfless and how idealistic and how brave they are, this can really inspire Jewish youth and really the whole generation to become better, to adopt their values and their ideals, and become a light to the nation, a holy nation, and a nation of priests.
And not just Jewish youth. I'm 65 years old, and they inspire me. they definitely inspire me, and I'm an old Jew. So it's not just the Jewish youth who will be inspired by these great Jewish heroes. They are just absolutely incredible. And you know, and Ron. When I see
they are really a candle of light in an ocean of darkness in this generation.
And you know, Ron, when I see the self-hating Jews that run the Israeli government and Israeli politics, and including the Israeli police and the Israeli and the border guards and the other people who do such terrible things to their fellow Jews and are so self-hating and so cowardly, though, when it comes to the Arabs, when I see this, it brings me shame. But when I see the Hilltop Youth, I feel Jewish pride. I think that
every
true Jew, the Hilltop Youth, they represent Jewish pride. They represent something we can be proud of, and that we can that really can inspire us and really can make us want to do everything to help our people and to be part of a great people. Because the Hilltop Youth, they represent what the Jewish people can be and should be and someday will be.
Absolutely. Ron, I think that the Hilltop Youth are really biblical warriors.
absent. They really are. Everything we read about in Jewish history, about great Jewish sacrifice, about all the great Jews in history, everything we read about. And Ron, I hope to be doing programs with you in the future on the heroic Jewish revolt against Rome and the Maccabees and also about Etzel. I want to do programs with you in the future on that because Ron knows a lot about these subjects. They really, the things we read about in history, we're seeing this in the Hilltop Youth today. They represent that heroism in our generation. And I can't believe that there are any Jews out there that wouldn't want to support them and wouldn't want to do everything we can to help them. Jews and righteous Gentiles. Jews and righteous Gentiles. Ron, I want to give people an opportunity to support them. I want to tell people how to do it. There are two ways they can do it. They can do it online by going to our main Hebrew page, which is hayamin.org. They go to hayamin.org and there's a donate button in English on top. And just click on the donate button and in several minutes they can very conveniently donate. If they don't want to do it online, if they want to do it by sending checks and money orders through the regular mail, that's fine also, no problem. They just make a check out to JTF and send it to JTF, P.O. Box 650327, Fresh Meadows, New York, 11365, JTF, P.O. Box 650327, Fresh Meadows, New York, 11365. Ron, do these contributions really help?
Absolutely. They really make the difference for them. They really make the difference for them. And I'm in daily contact with these Jews, and they tell me every single day that if we didn't help them, they really aren't sure that would have been able to survive.
Ron, as always, it's great speaking to you. I know that people ever since they heard you on our first program that we did together on Ukraine and Russia, people have been have always said to me, I should put you on all the time because it's always great speaking to you. You are an inspiration to us as well. Ron, thank you so much.
Thank you, Juan. Thank you.
Okay, let's go now to our questions from our great JTFers, and let's start with Hirvatsky Noachide, who always asks great questions. Hirvatsky writes, and I quote, Maimonides explains in Laws of Kings 8:10 that Moses was commanded by the Almighty to compel all the inhabitants of the world to accept the commandments given to Noah's descendants. Is converting Christian missionaries to the Noahide laws the perfect revenge, unquote? Well, I don't know how it's going to work out in the time of the Mashiach. You're referring here to Moses, to Moshe Rabbeinu, but in the time of the Mashiach, in the final redemption, I don't know how it's going to work out. I don't know what the Mashiach is going to do exactly. The opinion of Harambam, of Maimonides, is that the inhabitants of the world are going to be compelled to accept the laws of Bnei Noach for the Gentiles and the Torah laws for the Jews, that they're going to be compelled to do so. How it's going to work out, what's going to happen, exactly what's going to happen, I don't know. And Harambam also says, Maimonides also says, that we don't really know exactly what's going to happen until it happens. We know for sure that there's going to be a Messiah, that he's going to rule over the world, that the whole world will know God, that God's presence will be openly manifested in the world, that there'll be an end to death, there'll be an end to suffering, and so on. We know certain things we do know. When I say end to death, by the way, even on that, Harambam, Maimonides differs with the other commentators in that Harambam says that in this world people will still die even after they're resurrected, even after Techiyat HaMetim, even after resurrection of the dead. Harambam says that people will still, the people resurrected will then die as well, eventually, that they came back to this world for purposes of correction. But they're still going to die because he claims that eternal life will be in the spiritual world only, whereas the other commentators, most of the other commentators, say no, the spiritual, the eternal life that we are promised is going to be in this world, physical and spiritual, in our physical bodies, that our physical bodies will live forever in this world. So there's a machloket, there's a difference of opinion on that issue, and again, we don't know for sure what's going to happen. The Christian missionaries, you know, missionaries are committing a sin. Especially if they're trying to convert Jews. That's a very serious sin. I've known evangelical Christians, not necessarily missionaries, but evangelical Christians, I've known evangelical Christians whom I've thought very highly of and I respected, even though I think their religion obviously is wrong, their belief system is wrong. But I've known evangelical Christians that I thought were truly pro-Israel and truly pro-Jewish and were really very nice people and decent people and moral people, and I was very, and you know, I have great respect for them, for some of them that I've known. I've known other evangelical Christians who are anti-Semites, who are evil people and who are phonies and hypocrites. So I've seen it all among the evangelicals, just as I've seen it all in all categories of people. Those who engage, though, in missionary activity are crossing a certain line. That's especially if they're trying to convert Jews. That's really wrong, and then they have to do tshuva. They have to repent for that sin, if they want to have a place in the next world. Thank you very much, Hidovatsky. And now we go on to Binyamin Yisrael, our great friend Binyamin, who writes, and I quote, "One, did Cleopatra Jefferson think she was in Memphis, Egypt, rather than Memphis, Tennessee? I guess it's easy to confuse an affirmative action geography," unquote. You know, if I recall correctly, Binyamin, I know you're using Memphis because it's Memphis, Egypt, and Memphis, Tennessee. You use it because it's the same name. But if I recall correctly, the company was actually in Nashville, Tennessee. I don't think it was in Memphis, but I understand why you're saying Memphis, Tennessee, because of the same name from Egypt and because she's calling herself Cleopatra. Understood. Binyamin now writes, and I quote, "Two, discuss the following Egyptians, Pharaoh." Pharaoh was probably not just one Egyptian leader. Pharaoh was a name and a title given to many rulers of Egypt. They referred to their rulers, their kings, as Pharaoh. So there were probably many kings in Egypt that were called Pharaoh for hundreds of years, because it's like a title. It's like president or king or prime minister or other titles that we give today. So there were numerous pharaohs. The pharaohs and the Egyptians were evil. They had an evil empire, and they did terrible things to the world. They enslaved their people and were very cruel. And so I think that they're in for a very severe punishment on the Day of Judgment. And now Binyamin asks about Ptolemy. I don't know if I'm pronouncing it right. Ptolemy, that's the Greek, isn't that the Greek mathematician? And Ptolemy was the Greek mathematician and the astronomer and astrologer and astronomer and mathematician. I don't know much about him, Binyamin. I just know that he was a Greek astronomer. A famous Greek astronomer, and I know that later mathematicians in other empires later based some of their mathematical theories and mathematical discoveries on his original work. But aside from that, I don't really know much details. I don't know many details about him. And Binyamin asks about the real Cleopatra. Well, the real Cleopatra, she was the queen of Egypt, even though she wasn't Egyptian. She was, if there's a term Egyptian, even at that point, Egypt was pretty much dissipating and disappearing, with all the different nations charging through the country and all the intermarriage and assimilation that took place. But she was really a Hellenist, and she was European. And she came with the Greek Hellenistic philosophy and ruled over Egypt, I think, for about 20 years. She was the queen of Egypt, and she was a ruler there. Until the Romans came and took over. Beyond that, I don't know much more about her. Mark Antony, without the H, should be. Mark Antony was, of course, a Roman politician and a general who became famous in Shakespeare's book about Julius Caesar. But aside from that, I don't know much about him. I know he was a politician. I know he was a general and a leader in Rome. But what really took place, other than the literary description of Shakespeare, I don't know much. I don't know much about. And Binyamin now writes, the real Muhammad Ali, not the affirmative action boxer. And yes, oh, Muhammad Ali of Egypt. Yeah, well, Muhammad Ali was he was the ruler of Egypt 200 years ago. And he was for many, many years, 40 years or something like that, a long time. More than 40 years, I think, maybe 40, 50 years. And he was actually Albanian. he was Albanian, the Albanian part of the Ottoman Empire. And he ruled over Egypt again 200 years ago, and he probably was the founder of modern Egypt. Because modern Egypt has no relationship to ancient Egypt, and Egypt is just a collection of tribes and just primitive, because the Arab world is primitive tribal existence, and Egypt itself was also just a collection of different tribes and ethnicities. And he probably is the one that put together the concept of modern Egypt. And again, that was about 200 years ago. Thank you very much, Binyamin. And now Binyamin writes other stuff, but Binyamin, we have the limit, the two-question limit, so okay, I see that you're writing something else, but okay, about the Flintstones in two different languages, okay, but we're going to go on. We'll go on from this point, and we go now to, and I thank you, Binyamin, for your questions, and we go on now to our friend Ram Sheva Sheva Ephes, who writes in Hebrew. And Ram writes in Hebrew, and I'm going to quickly read it and quickly translate it. Shalom Chaim Hayakar, Ma Shalomcha, Ani Rotze, Lesaper Lecha, Sheyu, She, Ani Choshev She Ratzita Lomar, Shehayu, Shehayu Asara Anashim, Bamifgash Etzli, Babayet Sheli, Ze Hayam Mutzlach Meod, Ohavim Oti, זה היה מפגש מאוד איכותי, וגם אני מרגיש רע בגלל הפיגוע בתל אביב שקרה, מקווה יביאו המשיח והגאולה. גם הרב ארז שחר מקהילת פתח תקווה רוצה לראיין אותך, וגם משה פייגלין רוצה לראיין אותך בישראל מחר, שתקבל עוד חשיפה מאוד מאוד קהלים, וגם ג'וני רוצה לראיין שוב אותך. האם שמעת על הפיגוע בניו יורק אתמול שנרצחו 13 אנשים? מה דעתך שנדבר שוב בפרטי? אוקיי, רם, קודם כל אני מקווה שכן נצליח לארגן את הרעיונות שאתה מדבר עליהם. כל הכבוד על המפגש שלך בבית שלך, ואני מקווה שנוכל לארגן את הרעיונות, ואתה הוא שעושה את זה בשבילנו, ואני מאוד מודה לך. אתה עושה מצוות גדולות, כי אתה נותן לנו במות חדשות כדי לפרסם את עניין נוער הגבעות, וזה מצווה עצומה, Ram, ואני מודה לך. And what I just said to Ram is, you know, he's telling me that all these people want to interview me now in Hebrew. Moshe Feiglin wants to interview me on his program, Yisrael Machar, which means Israel tomorrow. And other people wanted, the rabbi of the congregation, Petach Tikva, wants to interview me. And there are other people, and Johnny, who interviewed me before, wants to interview me again, and so on. There are, so we got some interviews that are being lined up here, and Ram is the one who's doing it for us. So we really have to thank Ram. He is helping us spread the word about the Hilltop Youth, because in the interviews, of course, why do I do interviews? I do interviews because I want to tell people about Chaim ben Pesach. What good does that do? I'm doing interviews because I want to spread the word about the Hilltop Youth. So Ram is really helping us, and we really thank him for that. Ram, כל הכבוד לך, יישר כוח, אתה יהודי טוב, אתה יהודי יקר, ואנחנו מודים לך על כל מה שאתה עושה. Okay, now we go to our good friend Joe Gutfeld, who writes, and I quote, Shalom Chaim, what do you think of the smackdown at the Oscar Awards between Chris Rock and Will Smith? Thanks. Well, Joe, I think you know that, I think you know what I think of people like this. You know, Will Smith is just a savage. This is not an actor. This is not, you know, he's supposed to be an actor. He's supposed to be, he's a gorilla. This is what gorillas do in the cage. I mean, this is a gorilla. And my apologies to the other type of gorillas. The other type of gorillas, the gorillas in the zoo, are more civilized than these affirmative action gorillas. This is an affirmative action gorilla. You know, what type of behavior on national television is smack somebody in the face like that? Just these are savages. Just savages. Thank you, Joe. And I don't know how else to put it. I mean, how else do you describe this type of behavior? This is not civilized behavior. This is behavior of savages. And now we go to Yamach Shmota Islam, who writes, and I quote, Dir Chaim, who is the most evil serial killer in your opinion on this list? Jeffrey Dahmer, Charles Manson, John Wayne Gacy. I don't know, Yamach Shmota Islam. They're all so evil. I really don't want to choose, because then I'm sort of lessening the extreme nature of what the other two did if I pick one out of the three. They're all horrifically evil people. All of them deserve to be put to death. Charles Manson was not sentenced to death. A terrible miscarriage of justice. Jeffrey Dahmer was not sentenced to death. He was killed in the prison system. Someone killed him in prison. These are monsters. I mean, these are monsters who commit mass murder. They're horrible, evil people, and of course, they deserve the harshest punishment. And you see the insanity that, you know, they commit mass murder and they're not even given the death penalty. Manson and Dahmer weren't even given the death penalty. It's just insanity. Thank you, Yamach Shmota Islam. We now go to Nachis, our great friend, who is a great JTFer, who writes, and I quote, Shalom Chaim, one, please discuss Bnei Brak, Kiryat Arba, and your take on the Bermuda Triangle. Bnei Brak is a Haredi Jewish community in the land of Israel, not far from Tel Aviv. And it's a nice place, even though it's very crowded and a nice Jewish town in Israel, but it's all Haredim. All Haredim. Haredim, of course, are the non-Zionist religious Jews in Israel, the ones who don't believe in the land of Israel and the land of Israel movement. At least most of them don't. And that's unfortunate, but anyway, it's a nice town. Nachas now asks about Kiryat Arba. Kiryat Arba is a beautiful community near Hebron. Beautiful area in Yehuda v'Shomron, in Judea and Samaria. Very, very nice, beautiful town, with very, very, with wonderful people and very brave Jewish pioneers living there. And the Bermuda Triangle, Nachas writes about the Bermuda Triangle, I believe, is nonsense. I think it's mythology that ships mysteriously disappear because something happens in the Bermuda Triangle. It's superstition, in my opinion, and nonsense. I don't believe there's any validity to it. Of course, ships are going to disappear in the high seas of the Atlantic Ocean. I mean, things like that happen. But is there some mysterious reason for? I think it's just superstition. Nachas now writes to your opinion and view of the following, and then following names are given. Joe Franklin. Joe Franklin, he was a Jew, an Austrian, a Jew of Austrian descent who intermarried and who was assimilated and who spent his life on TV and radio show. He had a TV and radio show for many, many, many years, decades. And he interviewed Hollywood actors and stars. And I think he could, I think it was bad because he, you know, he's interviewing people who are part of the decadence and the downfall of civilization and of decent behavior. Hollywood is the worst. And he interviewed those people and glorified those people. So I don't, and he himself was intermarried and he himself was part of this problem. So I don't think it was I don't think he led a positive life. I used to see him, by the way, on the street. I never spoke to him, but a couple of times I saw him walking down the street when he had our JDL office in Manhattan. I would see him walking down the street a couple of times. Just saw him there, I guess, going to his office. Nachas now writes about Jay Diamond. Jay Diamond was a radio talk show host on WABC, and then later on he moved to other stations. Someone that I did speak to a number of times on the telephone, someone who I was in communication with on occasion. Unfortunately, he never invited me on his show, even though his show had decent ratings. I would have liked to have been on his show, but he never invited me on the show, even though he was an admirer of our show. He watched our show in Manhattan, and you know, I used to speak to him, I used to speak to him on the telephone, and he used to tell me about the things that the experiences he was having with WABC and all the pressures and all the, because they wanted to fire him because they accused him of being a racist, and so on, and his transformation from being from the right to the left and all the other things that happened with him. But beyond that, I think he's pretty much dropped out of the public eye for many years now. Nachas now writes about Curtis LeMay. Curtis LeMay was a general. And he was a general who ran for, who made all types of statements, wild statements about using nuclear bombs. He was George Wallace's running mate for vice president in 1968. And he spoke about the using nuclear bombs in the Vietnam War and other situations, he actually hurt Wallace. He hurt Wallace's campaign. He scared the hell out of people the way he was talking. So, a general with not a very illustrious career, and certainly not in the public arena, certainly not as a candidate for vice president. And next one is Glenn Beck. Glenn Beck is someone that I liked in many ways, even though he had many problems, many personal problems. He's a recovering addict, an alcoholic, but he overcame that and had a, I thought he had a great show on Fox Television, was exposing George Soros, and they fired him. And I thought it was terrible. I thought that shows what a bunch of phony pigs they have at Fox News. They fired this guy. He was exposing George Soros. And they said, that's anti-Semitic, talking against George Soros. George Soros is anti-Semitic. It's not anti-Semitic to attack self-hating Jews. Attacking self-hating Jews is good, is appropriate. And I like Glenn Beck, and he, you know, he was very pro-Israel, very pro-Jewish, and I like the guy. He supported Ted Cruz for president in 2016. You know, that's always going to be a positive point in my view. I liked him, and I still like him. And next is Danny Thomas. Oh, I couldn't stand that Arab. Arab actor, and just, I couldn't stand him. And, you know, I knew he was an anti-Semite, and of course his daughter eventually married Phil Donahue. And they did so many shows. I mean, Donahue did so many shows where he attacked Israel and was anti-Israel, just a filthy Jew-hating cockroach. And Danny Thomas also is phony low-life Arab who hated Jews. And his daughter was a phony low-life Arab. And, you know, scum. And next is Shelby Steele. Shelby Steele. Shelby Steele, he writes things in support of Israel sometime. I don't know that much about him. If he's part of the establishment, I wouldn't like him. And if he's part of the phony right, I wouldn't like him. But the only thing I know about him is that he's written things in support of Israel. I know he's half black and half white. It comes from, as Obama, just like Obama's half black and half white, although you'd never know it. Obama only cares about the black side of him because Obama hates white people. But but he's half black, half white, and he's a conservative and was against Obama and wrote things supporting Israel. So that's the only thing I know about him, and that's positive. Beyond that, maybe there are things that I don't know that are no good, but that's the only thing I know about Shelby Steele. Thank you, Nachas. And now we go to Amraphael, another good JTF, where I ask interesting questions. I'm Raphael Wright. Shalom Chaim. Gambling is completely forbidden in Judaism, as a gambler is considered a thief. What about going or owning strip clubs? Can you talk about the Sicilian and Jewish mafia when you were young? Okay. Owning strip clubs is, of course, completely forbidden. You're not allowed to commit sin, and you're not allowed to encourage others to commit sin. A strip club is a form of pornography. And of course it's forbidden. Of course it's forbidden. Sex is something that should take place between a man and his wife. In a marriage where there's love between a husband and a wife, and they have children, and they have a marriage, and they love each other, and they teach their children proper morals and raise their children to be moral, decent, kind, compassionate, idealistic people that want to help and make this a better world. Something like a strip club is completely immoral. It's using a woman's body to tempt men to commit sins, and exploiting a woman and turning women into prostitutes, in effect. Now, they're not in effect. A woman that strips in public she's a prostitute. That's prostitution. So it's completely forbidden. Owning strip clubs, going to strip clubs, it's forbidden. Sicilian and Jewish mafia when I was young. Well, the Jewish mafia, I didn't know anyone from the Jewish mafia, but when I was in prison, at least, I didn't meet people from the Jewish mafia, but I did meet many, many leading people in the Italian mafia. John Gotti, and other mafia people, you know, and of course Rabbi Kahana had connections with Joe Colombo and with the Colombo family, because they were running an Italian-American organization fighting for Italian-American so-called civil rights, which was really a front for the mafia. But still, they came to all our demonstrations for Soviet Jewry with big signs saying the free Soviet Jewry, Italian-Americans and Soviet, and they helped us. And Rabbi Kahana was, you know, so he did have an alliance with them for the purpose of helping our fellow Jews. And mafia people were basically, generally speaking, were quite good to me in prison. They liked me. They said, you know, they said, come on, you know, I was already in my early 30s, but I looked much younger at that time. And they thought I was a kid. They thought I was like 20 years old when I was 32. 31, 32. They thought I was 19 or 20. And they would say, you know, kid, you're all right. You're not a rat bastard. You're okay. I know you didn't rat on anybody. They ratted on you. So you're a stand-up guy in my book. You know, that's how they were. And they helped me. And there were times when I was starving, and they smuggled. They used to get food out of the kitchen because they worked in the kitchen. They controlled the kitchens in some of the prisons, and they would get food out of the kitchen, and they'd give me kosher food when I was starving, when the prison system deliberately were refusing to feed me. No question, they also did bad things. No question. And today they're involved in very bad things, including drug dealing and other things that are very harmful to society. I'm not defending them, but I'm just telling you that, you know, my relationship with them when I was in the prison system was a good relationship with them, despite the fact that I knew that they did a lot of bad things. Thank you, I'm Raphael, and now we go to Kahana Will Always Be Right, who asks interesting questions and wants me to comment on the following people. Sir Isaac Newton. Well, Sir Isaac Newton, of course, was one of the world's greatest scientists, one of the greatest scientists ever in history. He was a strong believer in God, but he rejected the notion that Jesus was God. He called that idolatry. He said to believe that God would become a man was idolatry. And he was a great fan of the Jews and of Judaism. Very interesting person. Very interesting individual, Isaac Newton. And next is Albert Einstein. Albert Einstein, a disgusting person. A brilliant scientist, no question about it, but just evil. He was against creating the State of Israel. He said we have to live under the Arabs. We shouldn't create a Jewish state there. They should be living under the Arabs. Living under the Arabs is living 6 feet under the Arabs. But anyway, he was against creating a Jewish state even after the Holocaust. He was an open socialist. He wrote articles. He wrote an article once, Why Socialism? Why we should support socialism. He was an open socialist and was an open supporter of what he called world government. He called for world government. He said the only answer is that the whole world has to be under one government, which is, of course, these are evil things. Socialism and one world government, these are evil concepts. And he was an agnostic. He was not an atheist, but he was an agnostic. So, not impressed with that type of history, to say the least. And next is Niels Bohr. Niels Bohr is the Danish scientist. I don't know anything about him. Is he Danish or Dutch? I don't know if he's Danish. He was either. I think he was Danish. I think he was Danish, but I don't know anything about him. Next is Richard Feynman. You know, I don't know anything about him either. Don't know. I'm sorry. I don't know anything about him. Edward Teller. Edward Teller, I do know about. Edward Teller was an American Jewish nuclear scientist, another agnostic, unfortunately. He was also an advisor to Israel on nuclear issues. What else can I say beyond that? You know, I mean, he was part of the establishment, unfortunately, but he was, you know, he did advise Israel on nuclear issues and did support Israel's nuclear program, and also was very active in the American nuclear, in the development of nuclear weapons in the United States. Next is Carl Sagan. Ugh. Carl Sagan is an atheist, self-hating Jewish scientist who, among the wonderful gems that he promoted were global warming, which is such nonsense, legalization of marijuana. He was fighting for at a time when that was very unpopular, but he came out a long time ago for legalization of marijuana, which of course is terrible. I am immoral, bad guy, bad news. Thank you very much, Kahana will always be right. And now we go to our great friend Nekama, who is a fantastic JTFer, who writes, and I quote, "Dechaim, hope all is well. Here are my questions. It seems that Israel will sell Germany its Arrow 3 anti-ballistic missile system for $2.1 billion. What a disgrace. However, in favor of Israel delivering to Germany a ticking 5-megaton thermonuclear bomb as a down payment for the Holocaust," unquote. Nekama, once again, we are in complete agreement, as always. You make a great point. It reminds me of what I once told Pat Buchanan on the CNN program Crossfire in the 1980s. He said, "Are you against delivering to Saudi Arabia?" I forgot the cluster bombs. It was cluster bombs, and the question was, should we give Saudi Arabia cluster bombs? And I said on the program, he said, I'm sure you're against giving this, our Saudi allies cluster bombs." Pat Buchanan, the Nazi, said to me, and I said, "No, actually, I'm in favor of delivering it. I'm in favor of delivering them cluster bombs right over Saudi cities from 20,000 feet in the air. I'd like to deliver the cluster bombs." And he left, by the way, when I said that, he left. Anyway, thank you, Nekama. And now we go to Joe Brandon, who asks questions now in numerous languages. And his first question, the first thing he writes is, "Please ban Binyamin Yisrael." No, Joe, we are not going to ban Binyamin Yisrael. Binyamin Yisrael is a good friend of ours and a longtime JTFer, and he is not going to get banned. You would get banned a lot faster than he would. He's not going to get banned. And you're asking me in Chinese about what the Flintstones would be called if they were black. I assume that's what you're asking me. I see Chinese, I think this is, yeah, Chinese letters here, Chinese characters here, and you're asking me that question. I think, Joe, I think we already know the answer. We already know the answer to that. Thank you, Joe. No banning of Binyamin Yisrael, you can forget about that. And next we go to our friend from Israel, Chaim Azulai Efes Shesh, who writes in Hebrew, and I'm going to translate it into English. Shalom Chaim Hayakar VeHanichpad Mashlomcha. Birtzoni Lishol Mispar She'elot. Kehavara Shekeshurot Leseruv Aliyatcha Arza. Okay, he wants to ask questions in regard to the refusal to grant me to let me make aliyah to the land of Israel. Ratziti ladat matai bidyuk higia harega bo hashafta laalot arza. Ma bidyuk asat nekudat hamifne baratzon uve hachlatatcha laalot arza. And he wants to know what exactly was the point when I decided to make aliyah, and the answer is, All my life, I wanted to make out, well, at least since I was 14 years old, when I joined the JDL with Rabbi Kahana. Lefachot me'az shehayiti ben 14 והצטרפתי לליגה להגנה יהודית של מורנו ורבנו הרב מאיר כהנא, זכר צדיק וקדוש לברכה, השם ייקום דמו. לפחות מאז שהייתי בן 14, תמיד רציתי לעלות לארץ ישראל. And חיים אזולאי now writes, לגבי העזרה בעלייתך, רציתי לשאול איפה עומדים פני הדברים. אתה גם מחפש עורך דין לענייני הגירה מאמריקה, שיסייע לך, או שכל הסיוע והעזרה אתה מחכה שיעזרו לך מישראל. And he asks, where do things stand now on your Aliyah? Things, nothing. I'm not getting anywhere. No progress is being made. שום דבר לא זז לגבי זה, לצערי. And he asks again. He asks also if I seek an immigration lawyer from the United States or just from Israel. עורך דין מארצות הברית לא יכול לעזור לי, כי זה לא רלוונטי, זה לא ענייני לתהליכים בארץ. אז זה לא היה עוזר לי. And he now asks, אמרת ששורפת להיכנס לארץ בכל פעם שניסית לבקש בקשה. האם הבקשה סורבה גם כשהיו ממשלות יותר ימניות בכללי, והאם בגץ קבע את זה ואו משרד הפנים? כשסורפת, מה הייתה עילת הסירוב לבקשתך, כפי שהם כתבו לך? Okay. He also asks, He also asked when I was denied the right to every time to make Aliyah, was it were so-called right-wing governments, were the right-wing governments better or worse, or what was the difference, or was it the Bagatz, was it the Supreme Court that denied me, or just the Interior Ministry? לא, ממשלות הימין, כביכול ממשלות הליכוד, לא היו יותר טובות, כלל וכלל לא, מממשלות השמאל בענייני. הם דחו אותי ממש כמו ממשלות השמאל. לא היה שום הבדל. לגבי הבג"ץ, אנחנו לא רצינו לערב את הבג"ץ בעניין הזה, כי הבג"ץ בטח היה מכריע נגדי. אז לא רוצים לעשות את זה, כי אנחנו לא רוצים להנציח את הסירוף. ואם בגץ יכריע נגדי, זה הסוף. אז אני לעולם לא אכנס, חס וחלילה. אז זה רק היה משרד הפנים. So I answered him and said, no, we don't want the Supreme Court involved, because once the Supreme Court rules against me, that's going to guarantee forever that I never get in, because then all the politicians will all say, the Supreme Court ruled, what can I do? We don't want the Supreme Court involved in this, and the Supreme Court definitely would rule against me. The Supreme Court in Israel are all extreme leftists. So it was just the Interior Ministry. Ani mode lecha, Chaim Azulai. I thank you, Chaim Azulai, and I want to thank all of our JTFers for another program that I very much enjoy doing, of Ask JTF. For JTF, until next week, this is Chaim Ben Pesach. Shalom.